As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to Front and Nationwide. This is The Athletic's dedicated Blue Jackets podcast. Aaron Portzine with you on a Wednesday afternoon, a warm Wednesday afternoon. It's almost 60 degrees. There's still snow outside. It's one of those strange February days in Ohio. Or is this March? This stuff goes on until April. Joined today by Bally Sports Ohio's Jean-Luc Grandpierre. Hello, Jean-Luc.
Hello. How are you? It feels like a late April day in Canada, but we'll call it late February in Columbus.
Right. Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of strange, but I think it's supposed to be nice for a little while. Yeah, this is kind of the weather that kind of gets you thinking about the playoffs and meaningful games when the weather starts to turn nice, which is just the best part of hockey season. Blue Jackets, Jean-Luc, take one on the chin last night in Calgary, 6-2. They snap a three-game win streak, a five-game road win streak. Let's get into a few things with that game, if we can. They have been blown out twice by Calgary now within the span of about 3 weeks. This is the kind of team they have trouble with, but I felt like they were dramatically better last night, though the score was similar. This was a pretty good game well into the second period until Rostovic's turnover makes it 3-1. The shorthanded goal, 4-1, it kind of got away from them at that point. It feels like they're playing better to me, and I hate to put a rose-colored lipstick or sunglass, what am I going for here, on an ugly performance because it wasn't a great night at the rink. But I feel like there's been some progress made from where this team was a few weeks ago. Do you get that vibe as well?
Yeah, big time. It's a completely different game. And yes, although the score kind of indicates the same thing because it was a 6-0 loss on January 25th, it was a completely different game. That one, so we're talking about Tuesday's game where they lost 6-2. To me, it's a little bit of self-inflicted loss where you allowed 41 shots, which is actually not all that bad. But the 6-0 loss at home felt like, 11 to 12 nothing loss. And the one last night easily could have been a 2-1 game or 3-2 game, in my opinion. So a completely different hockey game. And I love the way the Blue Jackets defended the middle of the ice, especially in the first period, because you can see that Calgary loves to go, especially at first line with Tkachuk. They like to go east-west through the offensive zone all the time. And the Blue Jackets did a good job limiting those side-to-side passes.
Interesting. Well, I thought you'd be the perfect guest this week because there's so many things that just fall right into your wheelhouse here. Sticking with last night's game a bit, Adam Boqvist scores. Kind of a broken play, buries it, though. The kid knows how to shoot. He's got a little finish to his game, though he be Swedish. 9 goals now in 34 games as a 21-year-old defenseman. Jean-Luc, you made your debut in the NHL at 22 years old. You know what it's like to be a very young man in the NHL. How impressed are you by Boakvist, and how optimistic are you about this kid's offensive upside, given what he's been able to do this year at still quite a young age?
Extremely optimistic. You look at his goal total, it's really impressive. For me, as you look at him skate out there, it's not a guy that has, you know, 105 miles an hour slap shot or necessarily a really hard shot. He just has it. And it's hockey sense. It's him being at the right place at the right time, because most defensemen would not be in that position. We're talking about that goal he scored against Calgary.
Yeah.
Most defensemen would not be in that position and thinking of following the play wide as Patrick Laine is trying to shoot the puck. Yet there he is. And it's not only has the skills to finish, but he really has that offensive minded thing that you really cannot teach. You know, you could have taken me for 20 years watching video and, you know, I still wouldn't have what he has right now. So it's really impressive to see how he's developed so fast in two seasons. And the fact that he's 21 years old, putting that many amount of goals and points without being on the power play, realistically, because you know, he's on that second unit, and let's not kid ourselves, that the Columbus Blue, they barely touch the ice.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. His guy is Erik Karlsson, who, of course, you know, if you remember Karlsson in his prime, always wanted the puck on a stick. I don't feel like Boakvist is that guy, but maybe he will. I'm not saying he's going to become Karlsson. Maybe he's going to grow into a defenseman who wants to carry the puck more. But what kind of defenseman do you see him blooming to be if he continues on this trajectory? What style of play fits him? He doesn't transport it like Karlsson does. Who does, really? I just wonder what he's going to look like when he maxes it out.
I feel like... I'm trying to think of a comparable, and I can't really think of one. For me, he's not necessarily the guy that's going to carry it end to end. He's more of a support guy, almost like that second wave. His read for that second wave and where the open area is, when he's around with good players, they find him and he finishes no problem. So he's just a great support to that forward group. But like you said, Erik Karlsson's a guy that used to, you know, create a lot from the point, which I think Boakvist can definitely do, but Karlsson was a different beast because he loved to carry the puck through that neutral zone. And you don't necessarily see Boakvist do that all that much yet.
No. I wonder if he's going to be more comfortable carrying the puck as he gets older. I wanted to ask you about Andrew Peak because he's been an eye-opener for me, and he's starting most games opposite Zach Werenski now on the top pair. He's drawn 20-plus minutes a night. Kind of had a rough night last night on the one goal. I love the way Larson handled it. I mean, you might as well joke about it. Obviously, the kid, I don't even know if he, it's not even really screwed up because it's not like he made the wrong decision. He screwed up. What am I saying? But it's a bad luck bounce at everybody. If you play the game long enough, you're going to eat one of those. But on the whole, I think Andrew Peak has been one of the cluster of things, if you're watching this team closely this year, with an eye just not just for today, but toward the future, I think he's one of the guys that you got to feel pretty good about. And I'm wondering what you've seen in him so far this season, Jean-Luc Grandpierre.
I'm so excited for him. Heading into training camp, I remember sitting around and thinking, who's going to make the team between Karlsson, Peak, Bayreuther? And to me, it was clearly there's a lack of physicality on this team. And then on that blue line, if you can add it, it's definitely a big plus. And, you know, Andrew Peak, he's a Ivy League guy. He's smart. He knows what he needs to do to make the team, made it. But for me, the thing that's even more impressive is it's kind of, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's pretty easy to come up in the league and, you know, make an impression for 3-4 games and then kind of disappear slowly, but he's been so consistent game after game, and we have 47 games now on the schedule, and it seems like game after game he's getting better, more physical, and his ice time is also increasing. And to be able to carry that for a season, for me, he's by far the most improved player on this Blue Jackets team from last year to this year, and the biggest surprise. And it doesn't show on the numbers when you look at stats, but that's not why he's there. And to me, he's probably the guy that had the biggest impact on this team, especially on that blue line right now.
Now, do you think he's a top four guy when all is said and done and he's reached his ceiling?
If he keeps developing at the pace and the way he is, I don't see why not. You look at a guy like David Savard, you look at a guy like Vladislav Gavrikov, that are legitimate top four guys. I think Andrew Peak is right in line with these two guys. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. What is that like when you first come into the league, having to assert yourself physically against grown men? I think correct me if I'm wrong, but I think when you were a junior player, you were pretty physical coming up. So it wasn't like you got to the NHL and had to sort of add that to your toolbox. But Peak has done that, and I it doesn't come naturally to him, or it didn't come naturally to him, but it feels like it's almost becoming a habit now of finishing checks, being kind of greasy. What is that like when there's some big men out there, Jean-Luc. I don't need to tell you that. That can be physically intimidating, I would think.
Yeah, it's not easy because I kind of went through a transition where, you know, I was playing Bantam hockey and I was more of like that speed skill guy. And then I get to junior hockey and my draft year, I remember that this head coach in Val d'Or in junior said, hey, if you want to make it to the next step, you know, they got plenty of skill guys that can skate fast right now. You need to bring that physicality to your game. And that's when I had to make that adjustment in junior. Hmm. But Peak is doing it at the NHL level, right? Which is kind of crazy. So it is not easy. Yes, the game is not as physical as it used to be, but that's irrelevant because we're in a new era. You grew up in a different era. So it's definitely a big adjustment. And there are some quite large players that are men that he's playing against. And physically, I think he's just going to keep getting bigger and stronger. So that's definitely going to help. And here and there, he may have to mix it up. And that's another thing that, you know, he's going to have to learn, but it just comes with reps. You know, I don't think he needs to take boxing lessons or anything like that, especially in today's game, but just how to defend himself a little better if need be.
Now, you would be willing to help him in the fisticuffs department. He's got Jody Shelley at his disposal if he wants. He's got Derek Dorsett in the organization. Basil McRae, that man's got some resources if he wants to go to him.
Yeah, he definitely does. I think technically, Jared Boll and Jody can help him better.
Jared Boll,
I was more of a player that, you know, it's funny because I've never boxed or got in fights outside the ice. And I feel like fear was my main factor when I was fighting. And anytime that I fought without fear is usually when I got hit pretty hard or got knocked out. So as long as there's fear and that's your adrenaline, you're okay. So I wouldn't be a good teacher because I would just say, close your eyes and swing away, my friend.
Oh, I mean, hell, I could teach you to be scared. Yeah, exactly.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I was thinking this too as the night went on. Like, we're still, this Blue Jackets team is still in the early stages of becoming what they're going to become as they build back up here. And it's going to be fascinating to see, like, which of these teams, I'm thinking of some of the better teams around the league, and they're certainly aiming for that kind of roster. Are they going to be Colorado? Are they going to be Calgary? Are they going for Florida, Carolina? I wonder where this thing goes. And I don't think Yarmo gets to say right now just exactly where he wants it to go, because the draft is going to tell him where the players he's drafted and how they improve is going to tell him. But it's going to be fun to see what the Blue Jackets become. The youngest team in the league, so much is still going to change in the next couple of years. Any thoughts on where this could be going and how sort of fun it is?
I mean, it's fun to watch the process, to be part of it, because let's not kid ourselves. We've seen some team go through that process of getting better, but it's been tanking and tanking and tanking, and the Blue Jackets are finding a way to kind of do that rebuild through some decent result, which, 500 is really, if you ask me at the beginning of the season, if the Blue Jackets would be 500 halfway through the season, I'd take that any day right now. Yeah, because if you look at all the experts, they expect them, to be a lottery team, which they're not right now. So it's fun to see. What kind of team will it be? I'm not sure. I think it's going to be a mix, because I don't know what's coming up in this draft, but when you don't get a top 2-3, unless you get one of those surprise guys, like a Kucherov that got drafted really late and turned out to be a superstar, I don't see a player like that in the organization beside maybe Cam Johnson. I think Sillinger is going to be an excellent centerman, but he's not going to necessarily be that center that lifts you up your seat. Right. Yeah, so, right. He's not a Patrick Kane or a Connor McDavid. So, but it doesn't mean he's not a good NHL player. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure exactly what kind of roster we're going to be looking at here in, let's say 3 seasons from now. Will it be more of a Carolina type team, which is well balanced? Will it be a Florida team that's all skills? Or is it going to be a Calgary that's skills and boy, oh boy, are they big? You look at these guys and just their blue line. I mean, I think their lightest guy was 190 pounds, and I felt bad for him because beside that, it was like 210, 230, 225. And this is 2022. This is not 1995. So it was quite impressive.
Yeah. Well, I've been saying this for a while. The Blue Jackets, they don't know how to tank. They never have. And they're not trying to tank this year, honestly, but a strong finish the rest of the way is far more likely to screw up their draft pick than it is to earn them a playoff spot, given where they are in the standings right now. And there's just such cynicism in sports these days. Like, people used to whisper about tanking or joke about it almost like gallows humor. Now it's just spoken of openly. The NBA, NFL teams routinely lose intentionally to get better draft picks. The Pittsburgh Penguins have tanked their way to generational talents for two generations now. I think they're the reason there's even a lottery in this league because of how they went about things. But question for you, because you've been on some teams, especially early Blue Jackets, and I think some the Atlanta Thrashers team you're on, where you certainly didn't know before this season starts, because hope springs eternal. But you know pretty early on that management's expectations are that you're going to get a pretty good draft pick out of the season. What is that like to be in the room when you know that's the expectation? And do players in the room take great joy in sort of spoiling that? Because, like, there are people saying the Blue Jackets should be tanking, and these wins are actually losses. But then you look into the eyes of a player like Boone Jenner and Gus Nyquist and Sean Corrali and Gavrikov, and tell those guys that they're supposed to be losing right now. They're not hearing that. Brad Larson's not hearing that. It's an interesting dynamic, isn't it?
It is a really interesting dynamic, and I was part of it in 2004 when I was in Washington. Okay. And Glenn Hanlon was the coach, and Ovechkin was going to be that first, that pick. And it was, they were tanking, but there were still some veterans on that team that want nothing to do with it. And that's actually Joseph Boumediene was on that team. So back then, but like Jeff Halpern was there, and there were some older guys that they just didn't want to hear it. Guys like can't tell a guy like Brandon Witt that they were tanking this year. So there's still so much pride, and nobody wants to be part of it. But the dynamic in the room which is definitely not what it is with the Blue Jackets. But I remember in Washington where guys were literally like, we're winning games. And after the coach knew it was going to be gone the year after, and a general manager would walk in the locker room and you could see would be upset because you're hurting our chances. And they got an East Coast goalie. They had an East Coast Hockey League goalie with us to finish the season to make sure we're tanking. And this guy ended up winning a couple of games. So they weren't really happy about it, but you could tell. In the locker room, the guys enjoy winning. They just want to win because that's what got them to the NHL is being competitive. So you can't just turn that switch off. So I appreciate the Blue Jackets not going that route because it hurts your culture, especially when you have some pieces that you want to keep for the future. And you talk about a guy like Sillinger, Boqvist. You know, if they told Zach Werenski last summer that, hey, our job is to tank so we can get Shane Wright or whoever that is, I don't think Zach signs a long-term extension. Nobody wants to get through that. So you're still building that culture, and whatever happens, you will build through a draft, free agency, trades. I think that's the best way to go about because you look at the teams that have been perennial tankers in the NHL, not many of them are really out of the woods yet. You talk about, you know, the Buffaloes, the Arizonas, even the Edmontons, with the amount of first round pick and first overall picks that they've had, there we are 10 years later. And it seems like they can't find their way out. So I don't think it's the right way to build just because you're hurting your young talent as well.
Yeah, I think this is a really interesting topic. And I'm trying to get Jarmo Kekalainen to grab a coffee and go over this because it's dicey because you don't expect a GM to just open up the textbook to you and say, here's what we're doing. But it's pretty clear here that the plan is to not bring it all the way down. And so, you know, this year, Shane Wright, next year, Connor Bedard, they're not bringing it. They're not absolutely going to destroy this situation in the hopes of getting one of those two guys. And I think it's because it's not promised to you or guaranteed. It's a lottery. But B, I think there's some examples around the league. You mentioned a couple of them, certainly Buffalo and Edmonton. I think when you blow everything up, draft a guy and then build the culture around that guy, that's a really tricky situation. And it clearly wasn't working with Eichel in Buffalo. He wasn't strong enough to be the guy of a rebuild. He could certainly play. I'll never take that away from him. Right. I look at Connor McDavid half the time, and I wonder if he's even having fun with any of this. Right. It just looks so stressful. Their idea here is if you do get a Bedard or you do get a Shane Wright, or you're going to get a good player. You may not be getting the creme de la creme, but you bring them into your culture. And I would say, look at what Eichel's going to do in Vegas now, where it's not Jack Eichel and a bunch of background singers. It's him fitting into the chorus that is the Vegas Golden Knights. Right. I feel like that's what Columbus is trying to do. And I think that historically has proven to be much more effective way to bring an 18-year-old into the NHL.
Yeah, definitely the best way to do it. And again, you talked about the Pittsburgh Penguins, and listen, Sidney Crosby, there's one guy like that that's going to come every 50 years because it's not just the skill on the ice, but it's just the old aura around him and what he brings in that locker room. You know, Connor McDavid, no disrespect, probably the most spectacular player to ever play in the NHL, but he still doesn't have that Crosby attitude that really he's like, hey, I'm going to put everybody on my back here. Not statistically, but like in that locker room, guys like that, like Patrice Bergeron, they're just special. And yes, you can be drafted number one overall, but yes, leadership is a little bit part of it, but they're drafted guys based on skills and what their ceiling is more than anything else. So that's why the tanking thing is definitely not a good idea, in my opinion. But again, I'm not trying to be a general manager, but I would definitely talk about it in my interview. That's for sure. If I were to.
Yeah. It's good for podcasting.
That's right.
Yeah. Last topic of the day, and it's a meaty one. It's a 6'5" Finn named Patrick Laine. My God, is he hot right now? And it's creating a really interesting situation. It's not creating it. It's been here. It's just sort of amplifying it for sure. What do you do with this guy? I rather like having a guy on my team that can score easy goals. They're easy for him. This team historically has had to work so hard to score goals. And here's a guy mm-hmm. that can just blast it through a cement wall, as we saw at the end of the game in Montreal. It's an interesting conundrum. A, does he want to be here long term? B, do the Blue Jackets want to give him what will most certainly make him the highest paid player on the roster, certainly the highest paid forward on the roster? Should he be part of the trade deadline this year? He's an RFA for another year, so they don't necessarily have to do anything with him right away. But if they hold on to him into next year with another one-year contract, RFA, then he'll be a pending UFA. And then the situation changes, or maybe they lose a little bit of hold on the situation the Blue Jackets do. First, let me ask you about his game, Jean-Luc, because I do think it's made a lot of progress. And when he's going well, he's scoring big goals and lots of goals that can sort of erase what other shortcomings there may be in his game. What have you seen from him just in the last few weeks? I think ever since maybe Larson called him out, and he's responded to it quite well, at least productively. Your view on where he's going and can he sustain this? Certainly not, 13 points every seven games. He's going to cool a little bit, but are we starting to see the player for what he can be?
I hope so. I think for me, kind of like the rest of the team, inconsistency is one of the things that we've seen from Patrick Laine. We've seen some flashes here and there. Sometimes it was a shift. Sometimes it was a full period. Sometimes it was a game. But to see him put that stretch of game one after another has been quite impressive. To me, I'm going to use the word engagement. He just seems to want to be engaged in every single situation and shift when he gets on the ice. And it's tough to watch when you watch the game on TV, but what you want, watch them live to see him just hop over the board and wanting that puck versus, mm-hmm. I don't want to say he's hiding from it, but you can tell sometimes when a guy just, he's not feeling it and he'd rather not touch the puck. And yes, you will make mistakes. I'm all for it. But once that mistake is made, what's the body language? And as of late, it's a very good response from Patrick Laine. So that's how I answer the question. That's what I'm seeing from him is just, the point production is there, but also he's just he's very engaged shift after shift.
Yeah. So tough question here, but can he be your focal point offensively? Can he be your best forward if you are a team that has Stanley Cup aspirations? Or is he, because I had a veteran NHL coach conversing with him, not John Tortorella, if you're thinking that, about Patrick Laine. What should the Blue Jackets do with this guy? And he described him as a luxury piece, which I thought was an interesting definition. Can he be the focal point, or does he have to be the add-on, the specialty, the luxury?
Yeah, well, you kind of ruined it because that's exactly where I was going. I think he's a he's a force offensively. There's no doubt about it. But my way to the, I would call him a luxury as well. I don't think he's a catalyst. There are certain guys that no matter what their position is, talk about like Jonathan Huberdeau or like a true number one center where Sidney Crosby, there's very few guys like that, by the way, Alexander Barkov, guys that once they get the puck, it seems like the four players around them become instantly better every time they step on the ice. And then you have the guy that can just finish, right? And to me, that finisher is Patrick Laine. So for a winger, yes, but I think should he be your centerpiece as far as like if you're trying to compete for a Stanley Cup? I think he's that luxury second guy that you can have, not your main offensive weapon. But I will say, it's going to be interesting to see how Sillinger and, you know, Kent Johnson, they're saying they want him to be a centerman. That would be a pretty nice little luxury to have Patrick Laine along a Kent Johnson or a Sillinger down the future to really help these guys develop and really get some confidence as well.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too. Like, the Blue Jackets are going to be not a salary cap team for the next several years, probably. Now, eventually, the Sillingers, the Johnsons, those guys are going to – they're going to be coming out of their entry-level deals and getting paid. But you wonder if in the near term, Line A could fit with this group. You mentioned Crosby. I had a conversation with the veteran goaltender not long ago about who are the toughest players. Guys that when they come over the boards, you really pay attention to them. And he said the thing that's so frustrating about Crosby himself, super skilled player, obviously, doesn't have an incredible shot. He's got a really good shot. But he's such a smart player, he said. When he's on the ice, you worry about five guys, not just Crosby, because he brings everybody into it. It's like there's now five offensive weapons here because he utilizes guys so extraordinarily. I thought that was an interesting observation.
And it's just the fact that they look, you know, people are like, oh, Crosby's a whiner. I don't think it's whining. I think, you know, Tom Brady is the same way, or was the same way, I should say. They're so demanding on themselves that they demand a lot from anyone that is on their team. And that's why they're champions. Because they are so hard on themselves, they're not going to point the finger. They're going to point the finger because they know they gave it all. So it's not one of those that they're going to deflect the blame to someone else. They just have very high expectation, not only for themselves, but for their teammate. And that's what makes them so special. But again, there's very few players like that in sport. I think Tom Brady was one. Sidney Crosby is one. There's a few. Patrice Bergeron, to me, is definitely one of those as well. But it's just, those are special players. And it's not to take anything away from Patrick Laine, but, you know, he's not one of those. And I don't think the Blue Jackets have any of those. Honestly, probably 75% of the NHL doesn't have a player like that on their squad. It is what it is.
Yeah. Well, go find one, Yarmo, right?
I'm sure there's one somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, come on. Let's go. Let's get this thing going. Jean-Luc, thanks for your time, man. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Great chatting with you. See you at the rink very, very soon.
All right, Aaron. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, man. Talk to you later.
Bye.
And thanks for listening, folks. This has been Front and Nationwide. That was Bally Sports Ohio's Jean-Luc Grandpierre, one of the best guys in the business. We'll be back with you next week, same time. Thanks to Danielle, our producer. Thanks to David Cook for the great intro and outro music. And we'll be back with y'all very, very soon. Take care.